Thanks for singing with us, church family. Boy, it is a joy to be together and sing together and to share in common a mutual adoration of Jesus. And welcome. If you're just kind of landing here and haven't been in recent weeks, we've been talking about work and how the gospel makes us alive at work. It doesn't just make us alive in our churches during worship services. The gospel brings people to life at work. And what we've said so far is there's two extremes that we fall off the edge, and that is to make an idol of our work or to be idle in our work. To make an idol of our work means that we get our primary satisfaction and joy and value and worth and identity from our work. And it's so important to us that we end up being willing to sacrifice things that mean more than our work in order to achieve at work. We sacrifice our family, our marriages, we sacrifice our friends, and we sacrifice that which God has given us to be in our church family and beyond. And the reason is because we have made an idol of our work, which simply means we take something good, which is work. God created work. He created it for our good. And then we elevate it to something of a god. It is a good thing that has become an ultimate thing. And then we let it ensnare us. And it steals from us because work is not a good boss. It's never satisfied and it's never enough. Then on the other hand, there's another side where we fall off, and that is to become idle in our work. And that simply means that we don't take our work serious enough and embrace the purpose of work, which is for God to mature us and to change us, and also to use work to help us meet needs to live independently and not to end up falling into a lifestyle of dependence. Instead, God has given us work to meet our basic needs. So if we are not careful, we don't end up in the middle as gospel people who think about work and work in ways that reflect well on God. We find ourselves making an idol of work or becoming idle in our work. And today we're going to talk about how the gospel affects the way we treat coworkers, the way we treat people. And here in Colossians chapter 3, Paul speaks to employees and employers. For those of you who've come across people who said, I like the Bible because I like ancient literature, but I don't depend on it because it's not relevant in my life. We're so modern. We're so progressive. We're so far from the ancient text that the Bible is irrelevant, but it's interesting. The Bible actually applies to every single aspect of our lives, and if it isn't specific instruction, then it's very, very hard-hitting principle. Well, here, Paul the Apostle is teaching his Christian church how to approach work that allows you to live distinctly as gospel people, and he talks to employees, and he addresses employers. So we're going to look at that today and read what he says here in the book of Colossians, chapter 3, verse 22, and then we'll skip over to 4, 1. Here he goes. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything you do. Try to please them all the time, not just when they're watching you. Serve them sincerely because your reverent fear of the Lord. In verse 4, 1, over a page or onto the next chapter. Masters, be just and fair to your slaves. Remember that you also have a master in heaven. So the big idea here is that the gospel empowers us to serve and love even our coworker who doesn't deserve it. How many of you have a coworker who doesn't deserve your love and your service? How many of you have a coworker who doesn't deserve to live? Anybody have those coworkers? And you're in a family business. Anybody else? Many of us work with or for people who have caused us ongoing pain and frustration. Many of us spend 40-plus hours a week or 20-plus hours a week or enough hours a week with people who are uncaring, unfair, unreasonable, disrespectful, condescending, arrogant, self-righteous, insecure, and they're ruining your life on a regular basis. And you have gotten stuck with an insecure boss, one of the few unique tragedies, not tragedies, but unique experiences to be trapped working for somebody who's insecure. Then working for somebody who's arrogant, cutthroat, working with people who are irritating and And you know, this might you might not know you work for these people or with these people until you think about the last time that you've come home from work and you didn't say something like this: wait until you hear what he said to me. Or wait until you hear what she did to me. If you regularly come home and that's how you start your first conversation, there's a good chance you're working with people who are causing you pain or frustration. And today, we are going to talk through how to dramatically change that circumstance. In fact, some people have even said about pastoring that it would be so rewarding pastoring a church if it weren't for the people. Have you ever heard that before? Of course, I don't subscribe to that by any stretch. They don't know these people, our people. But what if we could stop the agitation? What if we could today, on Sunday, begin to believe something that God has revealed to us, and then on Monday, it dramatically affects the way we relate to our coworkers, our employers, and our employees? What if we could make an adjustment on Sunday that sees dramatic changes on Monday? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice to be punching in tomorrow, knowing you've got a new approach, you've got a new method to deal with all of the other people's problems that they're heaping onto into your life? We have a tendency to think about it. Here's the problem. For most of us, this is true. We have a tendency to think about our work in sinful and selfish ways. Would you agree? Okay, don't answer that, but eventually I'm hoping to help you see that most of us think about our jobs in selfish and sinful ways. Why is that true? Because we have a human heart. We have a selfish, sinful human heart. And the tendency is not just to think about our work or our tasks in selfish, sinful ways, but then that extends to the people who we work with, and we tend to think of them in selfish and sinful ways. So we can think of coworkers or employers as obstacles or competitors instead of thinking of them as people who God has created in his image who are facing all kinds of life crisis that causes them to be who and the way they are. They are people who God has created in his image. He loves them. It's his desire for all of his gospel people to love them too. But most of us think in sinful and selfish ways about our co-workers. And the problem is, another additional problem, the way this is compounded is this. When we have ugly thoughts about our work, it will lead to ugly thoughts about the people we work with. You know the person who takes the credit and passes the blame? You know what I'm talking about? They take all the credit when something goes right, and then when something goes wrong, they are very generous to pass the blame on, right? And how many of you ever thought that person there needs to be slapped in the face, or at least an eye gouge or a throat chop? Something needs to happen to them. This cannot continue to happen. Someone's got to do something. And then, of course, we imagine all of these people who are driving us crazy. There's always the guy, always somebody, or the girl who cuts the corners, who cuts the corners in their workload and then criticizes the way other people work, right? Cut the corners in your job expectations, but criticize everyone else's effort. And you and I imagine somebody confronting them, and not just confronting them so that it stops, but confronting them publicly and maybe embarrassing them just a little bit so they knock it off. We want them to get what they deserve. It needs to stop, and the way that they are working is a shame, and it needs to stop. Or we work for the boss, and this boss expects everyone to sacrifice their entire life for their company or for the employer or for the bottom line or for the results, but we know them. We know they don't lift a finger. When it's time to help, you're looking around for the boss. They're nowhere. They're doing something that must be so much more important, but they demand that we give our lives. And some of us have thought, how in the world did they get to be the boss? Who died and left a vacancy that they had to take the first living person and plug them into management? You ever think that before? And then sometimes we give way to this thought, too. They ought to be fired. They ought to be. Someone should fire them. I don't know why they haven't been fired yet. And by the way, this is a person who's probably has a spouse and kids to take care of. And in our hearts, we can spill out with this kind of, we want some action and we want some retribution and we want them to be fired. And then we want them to be unemployed. and be somehow unable to provide for their own family. Well, yes, as long as it eases the strain on me at work. And this is what comes out of our, you see what I'm saying? This is what comes out of our sinful, selfish hearts. But there's a gospel perspective. There's a new way to look at coworkers. And this perspective changes the way we think about our boss. How many of you need a real makeover in the way you think about your boss? And if your boss is here today, don't respond. Be very still. Don't even look to your left or to your right or up or down. It may look like you're agreeing or you're with me, okay? But you may work for a boss and you need a facelift in the way you think about your boss. Or you need a complete transformation in the way that you look at and think about and deal with your coworkers. The gospel frees us to express the same gracious love to our coworkers that we have depended on and that we need for ourselves. And in a place where there isn't much love to go around, typically the job site or the workplace, this is where we have the ability to experience freedom that the gospel gives us to graciously care for our coworkers. And it's the same kind of care and grace that we need for ourselves. And this is what it does, the gospel does. It flips the way we think about people with whom we work. And once you realize that you work for Jesus, you don't work for the bottom line, you don't work for the employer, you don't work for the results, you work instead for Jesus, and your first responsibility is to honor Him, then you realize that your job just isn't about you anymore. What if there was a chance that your job was not about you? It wasn't about your convenience, it wasn't about what you were entitled to, it wasn't about getting paid. What if there was more on the line than a paycheck and employment and your reputation? What if it were true? And if we have let our job relationships become increasingly more about us, guess what God does? He exposes us. He challenges us. He confronts us. You have it in your notes here. God challenges and He confronts our sinful attitudes toward our coworkers. And how many of you are married to somebody, or you are really, really connected to somebody, and you really need them to show you grace? Raise your hand if you need them to show you grace. How many of you have discovered that you're not as perfect as you had once thought or hoped? And if you do think you're perfect and you don't need grace, get married. Get married. I don't care who it's to. It doesn't matter who it's to. Get married and let them see who you really are on a regular basis. And you know what you discover? I need grace. I need a lot of grace. I need mercy and grace, and I need leniency, and here's what the gospel does. The gospel says, you know that grace that God has given you? This is for you to share with people that you work with. This is the kind of care that I've given you. And look what Paul says. Paul says, slaves, obey your earthly masters. This is verse 22 in chapter 3. Did I give you the fill in the blank? Let's do that. God challenges and confronts our sinful attitudes toward our coworkers. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything you do. Try to please them all the time, not just when they're watching you. Serve them sincerely because of your reverent fear of the Lord. Now, once again, I get hung up on this word slaves. You know, here's Paul the Apostle. He's talking to believers who are slaves because in that culture, the Roman culture, much of the economy, the economic engine was built on slavery. It was built on workers who were kind of ensnared in slavery. All different kinds of work was done by people who were slaves. You got into slavery. You got kind of trapped into slavery from all different kinds of reasons. But here's what I want you to know, and that is important for us to understand the Bible in general, that Paul doesn't confront the system of slavery because the Bible does not address the system as the root of the problem. The Bible addresses this, that the root of the problem is not slavery, the system, but instead it is the human heart. In other words, Paul doesn't confront the system and say, hey, slaves, we mentioned this before, slaves, unionize, hire an attorney, and sue your slave owners until you're free. He doesn't say, elect somebody who's going to change policies and write laws and we're going to liberate ourselves from slavery so that we can abolish slavery once and for all. Paul allows those policies, procedures, systems, and politics to be addressed separately. And here's what Paul says. If we abolish slavery, humans with a human heart would find another way to oppress people. You take some culture that has slavery and it's full of oppression, and it's easy to think it's full of oppression because of the system of slavery. And I guarantee you, if you go to another culture and you investigate a culture that has no slavery, it may not be slavery, but in some way, shape, or form, the human heart has found a way to oppress another individual. And what Paul is saying here is that slavery is not the issue. It's not the socio-economic, political system of slavery that needs to be addressed. Here's what Paul says. If you're trapped in slavery and you're a slave owner or you're a slave, God wants to address your heart. He wants to talk directly to who you are and the way you function as you're trapped in slavery. And so that's what we see here, is that our hearts inevitably rebel against having to serve someone else or having to give and do for someone else. Especially if Paul starts with the Christian employee, the person who is a believer, who is a gospel people, and he asks this question. And I think this is worth us asking ourselves as believers who typically are employed somewhere. Do you only do what pleases the boss when the boss is looking? Do you only do what's right when you know that the boss is nearby watching you? Do you only serve your coworkers and your boss because you fear what they can do to you, and you know that if you don't serve them, you could get yourself in some hot water? It might cost you an opportunity. It might cost you some money. Ultimately, it might cost you a job. And here's what God is saying to all of us who are believers who work for somebody: is it possible you only do it right when you're afraid of being caught doing otherwise? And he addresses our heart. And the way you treat other people should be colored with this very vivid realization that God is watching, that God is expecting from us the best effort all the time. One of my favorite shows is Undercover Boss. I can't get enough of it, and I have to admit, I tear up. I just, seeing the boss have that kind of impact on somebody, I say, why aren't we just doing this kind of thing all the time? And then again, I think maybe that's what would remove the element of surprise, and then people wouldn't cry anymore. And that's the great part of the story, is all of the drama at the end. But it's so rewarding. Isn't it rewarding to see the way? But here's the premise of the story. It's very sad. The premise of the show is that if you want to see people in their truest, most authentic self and the way that they work, you have to secretly disguise yourself and watch them work. Right? I mean, that's the premise of the show, is that the CEO disguises themselves and they work side by side with employees in their own company in order to see how they really work. And it provides some great drama at the end, because when someone's a total ninny and they're working like an absolute selfish, entitled slacker, we get to see the confrontation at the end. And on the other hand, one of the beautiful parts of the show is if somebody is working hard, selflessly sacrificing for the good of the company and to really make a difference in people's lives, we get to see it rewarded in the end. And a lot of us as believers find ourselves working when we're working, and we're working on the clock for an employer or another company, and we're working in such a way as to only provide our best, most sincerest effort when it's a performance review quarter. When we know that somebody is watching, when somebody is nearby and they have their eye on us and they're evaluating our performance. And here's the thing, we cannot be a performance review performer if we're gospel people. What Paul is teaching us here is that for gospel people, the incentive for working for the boss wholeheartedly is not an upcoming performance review where we might get confronted. It's simply because there is an inescapable fact that God is always watching. See, God is an undercover boss who is on the workplace, on the worksite all the time. And he has people working for him called gospel people, Christian people. And those people working for him reflect on his reputation, and he's concerned about that. He's ultimately concerned about his glory and his reputation. And God's eyes, this is the way we should work, God's eyes should provide more motivation for us than any performance review ever creates for us, or any promotion, or any raise. Whatever we do it with sincerity and with our whole heart, knowing that God sees. He is undercover, keeping track of the way that we work, because his reputation is on the line. And then Paul doesn't leave out bosses. So if you're a supervisor, a business owner, a some kind of boss or employer or manager. Paul here addresses you and says, God confronts and challenges your attitude too. Because as hard as it is to be an employer, it's equally as difficult to be in charge. And here's the question he asks. Do you care for and treat your employees the way that God cares for and treats you? Are you generous, merciful, loving, and caring to your employees? Do you treat them fairly, not just in compensation, but in the way you interact with them? Do you love, serve, support, and care for them in what way, you might ask? The same way that your master in heaven treats you. That's called the boss's boss principle. Every boss has a boss. And if you're a Christian boss, your boss is not someone in the flow chart above you. You ultimately work for the king. And the master gave you authority, and the master says, I want you to treat your employees the way I've treated you. Care for them, love them, treat them fairly. And you do so because every boss has a boss. Your boss, if you're a believer, is in heaven. This is what Paul says. Masters, be just and fair to your employees, your slaves. Remember that you also have a master. Well, where's my master? In the top floor, in the penthouse suite, in the corner office with windows? No, your master is in heaven. So if you're a boss here today, you may not answer to your employees at work, and you know that they don't answer, that you don't answer to them, but indeed, you do answer to the ultimate boss, and your boss isn't the bottom line. Your boss is not results. Your boss is not wearing a suit. Your boss cares only about the care and love that you deliver to your employees. Do you give deliberate care? Whatever way God treats you, he gives you grace, he gives you mercy. Then offer that same grace and mercy to your employees. And so these are the attitudes that dramatically change what you do. If your bosses are difficult, if your coworkers are abrasive, if you're a disciple, if you're a believer, if you put your trust in Jesus, then he gives you new work orders. You have a new objective for your work. And since your job isn't about your honor and your job isn't about your promotion, your reputation, and your success anymore, we have a new purpose for working. And as believers, here's our purpose. It is to protect the honor of our King, not to protect ours. So we no longer live for our honor. We're not trying to say, I'm entitled to this, or this is my reputation, or this made me look bad. The question for a believer now is the honor of Jesus being protected? That's my job. Protecting the honor of Jesus. And so here's how the Apostle Paul, Pastor Paul, puts it in verse 22. Serve them, your boss, your employees, your employer. Serve them sincerely. Why? Why do I do that? Again, because your reverent fear of the Lord. It doesn't say this. Let me point this out. Notice, Apostle Paul says, God does not say it's because of your reverent fear of being reported, getting fired, being overlooked for a promotion, being passed over. Instead, because of your reverent fear of the Lord. See, it's a worship thing where you say, I want nothing more than the honor, the reputation of Jesus to be honored, rather than I want them to notice me, to promote me, to pay me, or to otherwise protect my reputation. It's a new outlook, and it's a new job saying, I now live for the honor of my King. And that's what a worshiper does. I have reverent fear of the Lord. I fear that his reputation is at stake. And I fear of God behaviors, not fear of getting taken advantage of. And what might it look like then when gospel people come alive at work? Who are the gospel people who are? See, it's easy for us to think that if you can spot a Christian at work, they have a Christian mug. They're the smiliest of all. They whistle while they work. Oh, there's the Christian. Listen, he's whistling while he works. You can never get him to work on Sundays because he's at church. Right? This is how we know who gospel people are, right? Oh, no, it's the people who've decided that despite the language, the filthy language in the workplace, I'm not going to swear. I am not going to listen to this filthy language. Now, listen. If you want to stand out and shine brightly as gospel people at work, I've got three things that God reveals to us. This, if you really want to shine brightly and you really want to start getting along with employees and employers, here's three things. Number one, gospel workers aren't complainers. Oh boy. Here we go. Christians at work who want to stand out are careful not to complain. By the way, I got one for you. If you want to zing your boss tomorrow, today, whenever you go back to work, mention something to your boss. Say, can I talk to you for a second? Make it really dramatic. Hey, listen. Do you got a second? Yeah, can we make an appointment? This is seriously. Do you have a second? Because I really need to talk to you. And when you get alone with your boss, say something like this. I just wanted to thank you for hiring me. I am so grateful to have a job. I can't believe you're paying me to do this. I am so grateful. I can't believe you're paying me to do nothing. What I meant to say was, can you imagine it's so simple. And by the way, this is only do this if you want to shine brightly at work. Say, thank you for hiring me. Thank you for giving me a paycheck. Thank you because I'm not entitled. And this is what happens. Most of us cannot stop complaining because when we wake up and we realize we're awake, the first things that come rolling out of our mouth are complaints because of the way that we feel entitled or the way that we feel shortchanged or whatever it is. But it's true that if we want to stop complaining, don't you believe we have to replace it with something? And I want to offer this to you. Replace complaining with gratitude. God, by the way, here's one for you. I thank God that I have a job. I thank God that in this economy that I have work. I thank God that in this North Central New York region, in upstate New York, that I'm employed. How about this one? I thank God that at my age, I'm still able to work. How about that? I thank God that I am able to do something I love, something that God has gifted me to do. You see what I'm getting at? Complaining does the, I mean, does anybody have a complaining switch and you're just like, yeah, you're right, I should turn that off? No, we don't work like that. It's replaced, and I want to plead with you to replace that today. Why? In hopes that we are able to shine brightly. By the way, in one passage in Philippians, here's what Paul the Apostle teaches. God says this, do everything without complaining and arguing. Why? Why do everything without complaining and arguing? So that no one can criticize you. So that no one can criticize you. If you want to remove from someone the ability to criticize you, be someone who absolutely refuses to argue and complain. Then you know what? They go home and they tell stories about coworkers and employees, and they're not talking about you anymore. That's nice gospel freedom there. I don't know how to stop complaining. Yes, you do. Replace complaining with specific gratitude. Also, secondly, gospel workers aren't backbiters. Gospel workers aren't backbiters. What does that mean? That if you're gospel people, you don't say one thing to your boss's face in a fake smile, and then when they're out of the room, you tell people what you really think of them. You don't get yourself in situations where you're going, yeah, can you believe that decision? What an absolute incompetent jerk. Who would ever make that kind of a decision? Oh my goodness, hello, hi. We were just talking about your impact on the company and how much everybody thinks of you. We were, honestly. You don't get yourself in situations where you're double-talking one thing to your coworker's ears and then another thing to the boss's face. Does that make sense? Backbiting is something that is literally anecdoted. We're relieved of backbiting. And how do we do that? With a sincere heart, with wholehearted affection. And everyone, by the way, everyone and anyone who submits to a fuzzy, kind, bright light of a boss, everyone submits to that kind of boss. Everybody talks brightly and warmly about that kind of a boss. But gospel people find any kind of boss, any kind of employer, arrogant, self-righteous, incompetent, whatever you have decided that they are, somebody who's gospel people with sincerity is able to find the good and affirm and speak loving kindness to their employer. And they do that with sincere hearts. And by the way, when you respond, if you want to find who the believers are, real genuine believers in your workplace, look for somebody who has a loving, kind, sincere interaction with their employer, and they say the same things to you that they say to their employer's face. Because gospel people aren't backbiters. And let me ask you one thing. Let me slow down for a second here, because if you get yourself connected in any way working for a boss who is like this, this isn't just a little sermon point. For a lot of you, your work has really caused you tremendous trouble and pain in your life. And it may well be because of the kind of person you work for. It may also be because of the kind of persons that you work with. I want to ask you to consider something. I don't want to just ask you to stop complaining and stop backbiting. But would you ever give any thought to praying for that person? Praying for what's happening in their heart, what's happening in their life. Pray for their marriage. Pray for their family. Pray that God is able to meet them and know them and transform them and change them. Would you give any thought to exchanging the words of criticism and backbiting with prayers? And you know what happens when you begin to pray for somebody? Slowly but surely, you kind of like them. And then before you know it, you're stuck loving them. Why? Because you started to love them, or you pray for them. And by the way, when you're praying for somebody, you know what happens? God starts to help you see them the way that God sees them. Broken down, in need, prideful, hurting, in need of a healing, and in need of a rescuer. Who he has created in his image, and he died for them as fast as he died in your place. He died in their place. So we have to be so gentle and so careful with this kind of thing. We want the same thing everybody else is. Let me give you the next one here. Gospel workers aren't losers. What does that mean? They're not the weaklings. They are not the ones that are, I see the Christians in my company. They're the ones that get at the end of the line and walk and let everybody walk all over them. And what that means is that if you are a gospel employee, you can compete with force, but you do it in a godly way. You are competition is not a bad thing. What God addresses here is the way you compete. It is the method of competing. It's how you compete. There was this really silly little cartoon on when I was growing up called the Laugh Olympics. Raise your hand if you ever heard the Laugh Olympics. You ever heard of that cartoon? Seriously, nobody? Just I was the only one on the planet? So if you just raise your hand, I know you're over 40. I already know it. I just called you out. In the Laugh Olympics, there were these different teams competing to win, and it was the same thing. Every single episode was this race, and they're trying to win it. One of the teams was the Really Rottens. And the Really Rottens, every time they won a race, they won it with the same method. They had to sabotage the other team. They had to trip them, blow them up. They had to pull the wheels off of their wagon. Whatever it was, to win, they had to sabotage the competitor. And really, this is true. If for a lot of us, we feel like in order to get ahead, if you really want to compete, it's got to be cutthroat. And to succeed, we have to crush, short circuit, or otherwise undermine our coworkers. But here's what God is saying. Gospel people can compete, but they do it in a godly way. What does that mean? That means you set the pace with sincerity and hard work, with integrity, and then you help everybody live up to the standard. You do whatever you need to do to not just help yourself, but to also help everybody else live up to the same standard. See, you make a difference not just for yourself, but for the whole company, or all of the coworkers. And if you are able to do that, compete with honor and do whatever you're doing with a whole heart, not by undercutting and sabotaging the efforts of our coworkers. Now, does this mean every worker? Can we sabotage some workers? Can we undermine the people who don't really deserve to be helped? Aren't there some who kind of, I think probably there are some, right, who kind of leech off the efforts of others, right? They accept the credit, pass the blame, those type of people. And this is where it really gets gospelly. And this is what I want you to consider. The instructions that were being given here by the Apostle Paul, as God revealed it to him, is this. We only get credit, this is in your notes, we only get credit for loving the coworker who doesn't deserve it. Let me say that again. We only get credit for loving the coworker who doesn't deserve it. What does that mean? What could that possibly mean? When we only serve and love our coworkers who deserve it, we take the power of the gospel and we strip the power out of the message. Why? It means that we're religious people. That means that we only give to people that which we're getting from them. In the Old Testament, that's called an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And in the Old Testament, you gave back what you received. If you receive dishonor and disrespect, you treat them the same way. In the New Testament, here's what the Bible says. The Bible, Jesus specifically is teaching, and he says, what credit is it to you to love people who love you back? Even the pagans do that. The sinners do that. See, people who are not gospel people do that. Anybody can do that. And then he says, what credit is it to you? Jesus is teaching his disciples and saying, this is what gospel people look like. He says, what credit is it to you to do good to people who are doing good to you? What credit is it to any of us to love our friends when you're gospel people, something dramatic happens and we are now empowered and able to love our enemies? And what that means is the power that we have to live by as gospel people is the ability to, as we've been made alive by the gospel, to love, encourage, pray for, care for, submit to, embrace, invite over to the house for dinner, take care of their kids, give them gifts, grace, and mercy, and not because they deserve it from you, but keep in mind, but because we also did not deserve that from the God who created. Maybe you're so grateful that God doesn't give you what you deserve. I hear so many people say, God isn't fair. And I go, you got that right. Can you believe he gives me mercy when I deserve wrath? I mean, I don't say that. That sounds so preachy. Pastor, he doesn't. It's like, of course. But listen, trust me. We are not people who want God to do what's fair. We aren't. Because if we demand that God start to hand out what's fair and what's just, then we don't stand a chance. Instead, God looks at all of us while we were still sinners, and he intervenes for us, and he saves us by his love. In our place, he dies, and in our place, he lives. Why? Because he decided by his grace and his loving character that he was going to do that which had to be done for us, even though we didn't deserve it. And you know what? That's why I'm still with God. Along with his saving and sealing power of his Holy Spirit, I'm still walking with Jesus because of that grace, that despite the fact that I don't deserve it, he still gives me his compassion and mercy. You know what I'm talking about? And so listen, here's what happens. Because God has provided for us mercy and grace that's overflowing, it shouldn't just overflow to us, but we allow it to overflow from us. And it gives us new power to be merciful, gracious, kind, wholeheartedly sincere, and in servitude to our employees and our employers. Why? Because that's the way God has treated us. And if you want to make a difference at your workplace, listen, don't worry about wearing the right t-shirts, drinking out of the right mugs, having the biggest smile, and whistling while you work. Trust me. Offer to your coworkers and your employers respect, service, love, care, encouragement that they definitely do not deserve. And here's what you do. You make the gospel powerful, and it speaks so highly of the reputation of God. Gospel people work for the honor of their king. And they work in such a way as that they allow the gospel grace that overflows to them to overflow from them. Do something in the workplace that shocks everyone. Do something gracious for the person that everyone knows deserves it the least. And you watch if God doesn't wake you up with gospel power and gospel life and say, this is dramatic. And you know how it might start? It might start when we get back to work the next time and we have a conversation with the one who everyone knows is the biggest source of the biggest problems. And we say, listen, I want to ask you something. I have treated you poorly, with contempt, condescending, however they've been treated. And you say, would you forgive me? And the reason I want you to forgive me is because of the grace and the mercy that God has shown me. I have no right to treat you any less graciously and mercifully. Let's pray. Father, thank you today for the way that you've worked in us. Prayerful that you would reach into our workplace, whether it's home, whether it's job site or no matter where it is, I pray that you would let the gospel empower us to be a unique people, protecting your honor, demonstrating the undeserved kindness that you have expressed to us, to everyone we were with. And we trust that you would make us alive enough to do it. I wonder if you'd raise your hand today and say, Pastor, I'm one. I need a dramatic makeover with my coworkers. Would you raise your hand? There's somebody in your workplace, there's somebody in your life, and you just need God to do a unique work to use you to dramatically impact the relationship that you have. Anybody? Anybody else? Thank you. God, teach us, grow us in grace today, we ask in Jesus' name. Would you stand and sing these songs of grace and mercy?